Pulling up swings. Pulling up swings. Pulling up swings. Pulling up swings tech show.
Hi, and welcome to the very first edition of the Linux Link Tech Show. My name is Link Fessenden, and we also have with us tonight our co-host Dan Washko and the ever-popular Mixmaster Jam Alan Metzler, who has graciously donated some wonderful equipment so that you can actually listen to us today. I guess one of the things that we'd like to do at this point in time on the brand new show is explain kind of what our show is like and what our intentions are and how things are going to work with this show. Dan and I had thought that we might do a nice tech radio show to take care of some of the open source news and technology things that are coming out on the market now, and a bunch of the new software and things that are rolling out for Unix and open source, and keep everybody informed and maybe have a little bit of fun at it at the same time. And basically what we're going to do with this show, or our intentions of the show, is to have a weekly program for some specified length of time where we can talk to everybody and share all of our wonderful opinions that we have. And, of course, you'll be able to listen to it here on the linuxlink.net/8000. The stream every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And after that, when the show's over, we intend on restreaming the show for a week until we do our next live broadcast. You'll be able to listen to it right there or download it from our archives, which you'll notice are sorely lacking right now because this is the first show.
The archives will be up after this show.
The archives will be up after this show, yes. And at this point in time, I'd like to turn it over to Dan, and Dan has a couple of topics he'd like to talk about. The first thing, I think, is Dynabolic. Dan?
Yes, thank you, Link. First off, I'd like to once again thank Alan, the man, for bringing over to the mixer and running out the Radio Shack and getting us a new mic. If it wasn't for him, this thing wouldn't be possible today. But equally important is the software we're running this on. This week it's quite sweet because the official stable release of Dynabolic has been put out. It was just yesterday that it was actually made official. 1.0, that's what we're running right here, right now, using Muse to stream our mics and other sound effects in.
This is the third rendition of Dynabolic that we've done so far, right, Dan?
Yes, it is, and all have worked admirably. I've been quite pleased. For the past week, we've been streaming some music we got off of openmusic.com, I believe it was. In fact, prior to starting up the show, we were playing a lot of music from Rapture. They're pretty nice, and it's great that we could actually stream some of those songs without having to pay for anything.
Absolutely, and by the way, just to insert something here, if you're a local band and you'd like to get some sort of airtime going on, we would really, really love to hear from you. Please contact us over here at the tech show, and perhaps we can get some music files that we can stream around on the show and around it as we go along.
Yes, that would be quite sweet. And even if you're not in a band and you'd like to mix some sound effects together, that would be quite wonderful also. Also released this week, actually today, was a Slackware Release Candidate 2 for 9.1, and I'm really excited about that. One of the first things I did as soon as I heard that is whip out wget and rip those files down off of one of the mirror sites. I'm pretty sure I was using Swedish FTP site. That seems to work the best for me. I'd give a copy to Link, which I did give a copy to Link, but he's still running 8.1. And I guess he's quite happy with it. Link?
No, I'm just I'm a horrible, horrible procrastinator, and I run 8.1 on my main Linux box at home and actually run 9.0 on just about everything else that I'm not running NetBSD on, which is another really good one I like.
Yeah, I've been running Linux or Slackware for got a good four years now, and I've been extremely satisfied with it. The server that we're running on, like I said, we're streaming from Dynabolic, and before he decided to build Dynabolic from scratch, he was using Slackware as the base for Dynabolic. But furthermore, the server that we're streaming from, the Icecast server, is running a Slackware Linux 8.1 machine. And that's been running really good, a 241 days uptime prior to taking it down the other day.
Yeah, I tried that with a Windows box.
Hardware upgrades. Well, got to warn me when that Windows is coming up. I got to get the cash register ready. But, yeah, so Slackware was released. There's a review on it over at osnews.com. A very good review, actually. The only complaint that the guy could issue, the author, the writer of the review would issue, is regarding multimedia support in Slackware. And I'd like to add that multimedia support in Linux in general is a hair-pulling endeavor, I think.
This stemming from the 3 years that we've tried to get some kind of a video editing system together just to do simple video capture and editing.
Yeah, it's been an uphill battle with a lot of this stuff. Slackware 9.1, one of the complaints was it doesn't include the ALSA drivers, but I believe the ALSA drivers are replacing the OSS, open source sound stuff, in
standard in the 2.6 kernel.
In the 2.6 kernel, so Slackware users, you're going to have to wait till the 2.6 kernel is officially released. But under the extras in the Slackware 9.1 is ALSA packages. So you could always just use that or compile it yourself. But as Link was stating, we both have had frustrations with Linux and multimedia, particularly video. I know Link's interest is building a TiVo-like device, and I'll let him start with his process and progress, or lack thereof, that he's made or not made down that avenue. Link, why
definitely.
Don't you
I really haven't made a whole lot of progress in it. Dan and I started out trying to do some of this stuff probably over a year ago. And one of the really nasty things about this is I can manage to capture some actual live video feed. Getting a fast enough machine to actually push that live video feed into an MPEG file or something like that is difficult enough. But then you compound it with it. The software is lacking, in some aspects, audio support. So you can capture video, but you really can't hook any live audio to go along with it. I understand that there are a lot of different programs that you can use to attach audio to an MPEG file possibly afterwards, but that really doesn't help in that endeavor. However, I've been reading around, and there's been a lot of progress with the personal video capture devices that they've been making under Linux. And one of these days, I'm really going to have to get in there and try that again, but I'll probably have to get a faster video capture card. The other alternative that you have when you're like me and you're just a giant geek is that I happen to have some different hardware home, and I have an SGI Indy and an Octane, which I can capture video on, and those work. You know, they're absolutely flawless. But then again, you're talking it's a closed source operating system, and sometimes that hardware is really, really difficult to get a hold of. And then again, you're dealing with SGI formats that have to be SGI multimedia formats that have to be remanufactured into standard MPEG or AVI video streams, which also causes problems. Even though that works, it's still not the absolute solution that I'd like to have. How about you, Dan? Have you got anything that you've been doing on that front lately?
I have gotten to the point where I'm able to capture video streams using the MJPEG tools, the LAV record. It comes down to, and also FFmpeg, I've also been able to record from. I've
had you get the live audio with that too?
I have incredible problems getting live audio with it.
Is it attached, or is it just like clippy?
It's non-existent, actually. You can hear the audio coming through, but it doesn't pick it up. I have to actually boost the audio in on live record, and that seems to do it up to about 80 to 100% boost. If I use FFmpeg, I do not get any audio, which is odd because you can hear it playing. But I tried FFTV, and I took the binary that I compiled from there, put it in to all the rest of the software with FFmpeg, and I was able to record sound. But now I'm at the point of wishing I could record something above 320 by 240.
So it's just limitation of your video card then?
It's not so much a limitation of video card now, it's the processor and RAM that I have. It really chaps it out if I try and record it above 320 by 240.
What kind of system is that you're running there? How fast is the system, Dan?
Well, it's just an AMD K6400. With
a 400 megahertz processor.
Yeah.
A 400 megahertz processor.
That's pretty low end by today's standards. It does about 95% of what I want it to do.
I'm not going
to
say anything because I'm sitting in front of my laptop right now. My new laptop, folks, this is the state-of-the-art thing for me. And guess what it is? It's a 400 megahertz P2, a Dell Latitude. I love it. It's fantastic. Go buy one today.
Not to, I hate to bring up this topic, this name actually, but Microsoft. I have, way back when I first got...
Who was that again? Microsoft?
Microsoft. Microsoft, when I first got my video capture card, which at the time was a Pinnacle Systems... Pinnacle Systems Studio TV, whatever it was. They had software in there that I was able to capture video from my camcorder, from the VCR, whatever I put in there, and at a higher resolution, and it worked great, and I was able to edit it. And except for the occasional complete lockup of the system, it worked well enough for what I wanted to do. And I've been ever since trying to replicate that process in Linux. The closest I've been able to get to having a graphical capture and editing tool has been Main Actor, but a couple years ago it was $100. Now it's up to $200. So it's a little out of my price range for what I want to do.
Yeah, but so you're telling the real problem is not the hardware. The problem is the fact that the manufacturers don't think enough to release their code base so that the open source people can actually manufacture an application that runs with it. Instead of having to reverse engineer everything and poke and hope and get what you can out of the card.
Yes, that's unfortunately the case. There is a lot of support for high-end video. As you know, DreamWorks, I think it is?
Yeah, DreamWorks.
Ported over completely to Linux now.
DreamWorks is moving over to Linux. SGI is moving their server base and their render farms over to Linux.
Maya's running on top of Linux. We saw some HP video editing stuff that's been running on top of Linux. If I had
Industrial Light and Sound.
If I have $1,500, it would be great to get a basic copy of that, but I can't even afford a measly copy of Main Actor. I recently got a PowerBook, G4 PowerBook, which has iMovie on it, which, it's kind of sweet. But I don't have a digital camcorder. And if I had a digital camcorder, then I can get my video in. So what I'm stuck doing now is I have to use Live Record to pull stuff off of my camcorder, which I can then convert it into a QuickTime format and put it over to iMovie and edit it in there if I wanted to. But I get the feeling if I had a digital camcorder, of course, it would make it easier to do on the Apple side. But also, there's some neat applications for digital video like Kino that I've able to compile and run, and it looks like a wonderful to do everything I wanted it to do.
These are all just what, Mac OS?
No, I'm talking OS about a Linux-based application now, Kino, digital video capturing and editing. But it has to be digital video. I can't pull it in off of my tuner card. It has to come in on the digital. And it looks beautiful. Unfortunately, because I do not have a digital camcorder or a FireWire card at the moment.
But if you have to pull it in on digital video, don't they make PCI video cards that have a digital video input? Digital output, like S-video output?
Well,
digital.
Yes,
digital
they do.
Outputs. Or does it have to be a FireWire kind of thing?
You'd want, ideally, a FireWire kind of thing. But, like I said, I don't even have a digital camcorder. So, I would not be able to utilize a FireWire device or some of the other stuff. I think you might even be able to get an adapter for AVI to digital, if I'm not mistaken. But I don't feel like going down that route. That's a little too much work for... You know, for the price of, by the time you buy something like that, you're halfway to buying a digital camcorder. And my mother-in-law is rich, so maybe for Christmas, who knows what will happen. Yeah, proper hitting.
Probably
not listening right now.
Hello, Dan's mother-in-law. If you're listening, he really, really wants a digital video camcorder.
But that's where I'm at. I'm getting some success. I'd really like to try out FilmGIMP, but the documentation on that is just almost non-existent, and it's almost been the documentation on all this video stuff that we've been using has almost been non-existent.
Right, but in fairness, the video for Linux projects have come a long, long way since we've started looking at them, and FilmGIMP is a relatively new program, I believe. Is it even past beta stages yet?
Yeah, actually, it's being professionally used, if I'm not mistaken, which is a good thing. But yeah, and
professionally used by professional people who professionally know what they're doing.
Yeah, there's a whole organization called Linux Film Linux or Linux Movie or something like that. I forget what it is, and I'm on their mailing list. But the stuff that they talk about is just right now way over my head. I'm not into. That deeply, although, you know, I wish I was, but I'm not. So it's a big field that's just opening up. Now, speaking of that, we're overlooking one of the most obvious things. The newest tool that we have, Dynabolic 1.0, has support for video streaming, video editing, video capturing. One of the programs on there is called Lives. It's Linux video editing system. I have not had the opportunity to play around with that yet. In fact, it even has Cinelera on there too, which is the child of Broadcast 2000 by Heroin Warrior.
Cool.
But if you ever tried to get that installed, that's a monster to install, and it's also a monster to run too. I think they recommend at least a gigahertz processor, maybe dual processors, but it tends to dog my system pretty severely.
But don't think for a minute that you need to have that to run Dynabolics, because that's where we're running right now, correct? Dynabolics 1.0?
Yeah, we're running it on the Pentium 3450.
Brand new release on a Pentium 3450. How much RAM is in that thing, Dan?
Let's see, 128 and 64 would be 192.
192 megs of RAM. This thing runs, again, this is a CD-based distribution. This is one of the really cool things that you can do with Linux right now, and also a couple other operating systems. You can run these on a CD-only based distribution. So if you happen to be one of those Windows people out there, those horrible, nasty Windows people out there.
Ooh.
Anyway, if you happen to be one of those people out there, you can actually try Linux or NetBSD, and there are also a couple of other distributions out on the market that run only on your CD-ROM. Don't access your hard drive at all. Therefore, you don't have any problems with overwriting any of your information. You can play with them to your heart's content. Shut your computer off. You don't have to worry about corrupting any files or anything like that. It's a wonderful thing. And the simple fact that Dan and I came across this Dynabolic maybe a week ago, and we have this thing running on a P3450 now doing this radio show, and I'll tell you, you guys can't see it, but it really looks fantastic over there. There's all kinds of nifty things running on, and Dan's on the IRC channel waiting for somebody to chat with us, even though nobody has yet. Running IRC and running this wonderful Muse client, which is streaming off to our Icecast server and sending out to you folks that are listening out there right now. And it's just it's a really neat thing to see on something that's only running off a CD-ROM drive.
Yeah, this is great. I think I messed up with encoding some of these sound effects MP3 files using RAM. So as we're actually doing this and I'm streaming from this machine, I'm encoding the WAV files into AUG format and seeing how that works as opposed to the MP3s. And again, we're running straight off of a CD. And there's nothing installed on the hard drive, completely out of memory. It's a very impressive system. I just find that utterly fascinating. But I guess, I don't know if you have anything more to talk about on the multimedia end. I'll look at the IRC chat and see if there's any questions on there.
I don't see anybody on there but me.
I'm looking at the log. The Icecast log, I see that there's two clients connected.
All right, well, those two people that are connected, well, one of them is probably us here recording it. But the other person that's connected, hi, hun. Thanks for listening anyway. But what's the next topic that we were going to go over? Wireless, right? Linux wireless devices?
Yes, Linux wireless.
Using wireless with Linux?
Yes, using wireless with Linux. And I will... I'll let you start so I can encode some more of these AUG files. Right, it's hard to do that, control the mouse and the mic at the same time.
This kind of setup that we have right now, we really threw this together at the very last second. Special thanks again to Alan. He brought over a mixing board for us, and we had, you know, just a couple of cheesy PC microphones that just wouldn't cut it, didn't have enough impedance to drive the board. We couldn't get the right sound out of them. So the man took time out of his busy evening and did a couple of parts runs to Radio Shack for us. And we got the microphones that we needed, and everything's running right now, even though we were a couple minutes.
Oh, you know what? It would help if I would turn my microphone on. That would make a world of difference to what I'm talking here. But we did have a little bit of a technical difficulty right there, which is to be expected for the first show. We have Link's wife is reconnected. Are we reconnected over there?
I think that's us.
No, it's Verizon.net that reconnected. Have we reached the buffer up there yet?
No, it's not
getting. Here, let me see this. Oh, look at Link's messing something up again. There we go. It's starting to buffer now.
All right.
But looks like we're doing all right. Hopefully we're back on. And that only other person that's connected will have to do some post-show editing to combine the streams together. We got a cocky smile on Alan's face. How dare you? How dare you? But let me make some...
All right, and this is the follow-up to the halftime show.
Let's take that.
How many people
Alan
can you have run around 65 computers in a 4-foot square area?
Oh, sitting over here laughing at us. If you didn't get these microphones, it'd be a problem.
If this is the only technical difficulty that we have on the first show, then I'm going to count us lucky, actually. But if we can just, you know, all we got to do is to get Dan to quit pissing with the server over there, and we're in good shape. But yeah, he has to hold the microphone a little bit farther away from the power button.
Well, you know what, Link, you just start talking again about wireless. I'm going to make sure everything's okay on this end.
All right, here we go. So if I break off again, it's because Dan is over there playing. But anyway, what I wanted to talk about with the Linux wireless is that even though I'm a monster geek and I love all of this technology stuff, I'm really, really far behind the times. And I just got... Perhaps a month or two ago, well, probably 2 or 3 months ago, I just got my first wireless setup. I figured, you know, maybe I should catch up. Everybody's telling me how fun this is running all of these wireless sniffers and checking out all the people's networks in their neighborhood and all of that fun stuff. So I figured I'd go out and get myself a wireless setup, and I had the hardest time searching around for cards that were actually supported, wireless network cards, PCMCIA network cards, that were supported by Linux. And in eventuality, I ran into a Walmart store and I saw a Linksys card there, and I figured, you know, what the heck, I'll just get it and take it home and try it, and if it doesn't work, I'll stuff it in the box and bring it back and tell them it was broke or something. So I grabbed it and brought it home, and sure enough, it fired right up and worked the first time on the default drivers and Slackware 8.1 or 9 or whatever I was running at the time. And it is a Linksys WPC11 version 3. Now, we have subsequently learned that you do not want the WPC11 version 4 because that does not work. Not only does it not work on Linux, it doesn't even work with Linksys's own print servers. So do yourself a favor and stay away from that one. And, of course, if you really do want a card that you're sure is going to work, you can go with, like, was it the Orinoco Gold Series cards and things like that, the more expensive, higher-end cards. You're pretty much guaranteed on that, as long as it's not absolutely the brand newest thing that just hit the shelf yesterday. It'll probably go. And even if it is, if it uses a standard, like a standard Prism 2 driver, it should run right off without too much of a problem. The other thing I had issues with is that after I had my wireless NIC in my laptop for, I think it was 2 weeks, I had it in there, and I was banging around on there just at, you know, wireless network at work and stuff like that, and a wireless access point, or actually a wireless router that Dan had loaned me for a few days, I went out and bought my own. Even though the actual version number eludes me right now, it's another Linksys wireless router. It's a 4-port router, and I really, really like it. This is definitely the kind of thing that you want to get if you're running Linux. It's a plug-and-play deal. Take your router and set it on your network and hook up an Ethernet cable right into your network. And on my network, I happen to run a DHCP server, so as soon as I turned this thing on, it grabbed all the necessary information about my DNS servers and my gateway and the whole business, set itself right up, and I turned my laptop on, and I was on, man. I was in like Flynn. It was the coolest thing. The problem with that is that after you start looking at this and reading through some of the setup options, you figure out that, you know, maybe it would be a really good idea if you put some kind of security on your wireless connection so that, you know, neighbors like me aren't sniffing around and downloading their email through your connection. For the most part, most people probably don't mind, but in a world today that we have that's so insecure, you never really know what you're going to run into. And you don't want someone getting into some nasty stuff and having the FBI crawl up your butt because they're on your IP address when they do it. So what I would suggest is to secure your connection. And I'm going to have Dan explain to you how to do the security that he implemented. But what I did was I took the really, really easy route out. I just went into my Linksys router and I hit the configuration page, which is a simple web page. And I went in, and there's a setting that will let you filter internet activity by MAC address. Now, what that means is every network interface card has assigned to it a MAC address, and this is an individual and a unique address assigned only to that card. So what I did was go into my MAC address filter and put only my MAC address in from my card. Therefore, the only person that can get a connection on that wireless access point is my laptop with my wireless card. Of course, if I move my wireless card to a different laptop or something like that, I can also get a connection. But it's specifically designed for that card. And I can always go in if I have friends over and add their MAC addresses into the list. And it'll dynamically grab a hold of that information and let them right in. It's a really cool system. It has a couple of small drawbacks. There are some programs out that you can find now that are written by some really ingenious and crafty hackers that happen to be able to spoof MAC addresses. But as a general security point, this is probably a really, really good thing for you to do. The one thing you might want to add in combination to this, if you're really, really freaked out about this wireless security, is to go in and add encryption to your transmissions back and forth. And that's where Dan comes in. Dan, I know you set up this wireless encryption stuff. And well, pretty much I know, because when I came over here, I had to put it on my laptop to get it running. But can you give us an overview of that kind of goodness that you did?
No, I can't.
Cool.
So, actually, a side note, it helps that if the permissions and the owners of the files that you want to play are the right are set for the right groove. Wireless encryption is not that difficult to set up. Now, it might be a little more difficult to connect through Linux with wireless encryption. But I have myself a nice little Apple AirPort Extreme.
Because Dan can afford to buy that expensive hardware.
Yeah.
What's that new Apple laptop that you have running over there, Dan?
Actually, it's downstairs. I'm not running. I'm running the Dell Inspiron laptop with Linux installed.
Yeah, but what's the...
It's a G4 PowerBook.
G4 PowerBook. Is that the titanium?
The titanium. With a DVD burner.
He tells me he doesn't have money. No.
The only thing is the AirPort Extreme card does not work in Linux due to the Broadcom chipset. The Broadcom has not released drivers for Linux.
This is one of those new chipsets in opposition to the standard, like, Prism 2 kind of thing.
Yes, and it's really unfortunate that they haven't released the drivers, because, like you had said before, Linksys's own devices end up not working with their newer releases of the card.
Right, and that's the version 4 uses the Broadcom chipset.
Right.
I got it, right?
We ran afoul of that when I tried to hook up the superintendent's wireless print server. Ready print server, mind you. Someone bought a wireless Ready, which didn't have the wireless card in it. So we just bought a wireless card, and lo and behold, we got the version 4. And you wouldn't think. You'd think wireless card, link system should work no problem. Well, it's a Broadcom chipset, and the print server is running an embedded version of Linux on there. So that's that. But back to setting up the encryption protocol. Apple, of course, makes it very easy to configure the device.
But you're running that AirPort is just an access point, right?
Right.
So you don't have all those extra nifty options on the router like I have.
Actually, I do have a lot of the extra nifty app options, but I don't have firewall stuff. And in fact, I think they actually make a version of Linux that you can install on the AirPort. Without going too deep into that, it was simple. And just like with Linksys, because we set those up in the Cisco AeroNet devices that we have at work, you just go in there and you generate yourself a couple of encryption keys. It's 64-bit or 128-bit. And make sure you copy those things down, because you're going to have to put them on all the machines that you want to have access your wireless network.
Now, I keep seeing on these websites when they're talking about the web encryption, a lot of them will say to actually use a website to generate your encryption and not use the built-in utilities in the actual wireless router or whatever itself. Is that something that you've seen before? I've seen it on 3 or 4 different sites. Maybe it's specifically a Linksys or an early Linksys rant or something like that, but I keep seeing if you want to enable it, just use this form or something like that to generate your encryption keys. Because basically, it's you type a passphrase in, right?
Right.
And then after you enter that passphrase, it does whatever encryption technique it does to it, and spits out the result, and you just pop that into the form on your access point.
Yeah, essentially you could do that. Again, that's going a little beyond my expertise with the algorithms that they use. I've heard that comment made a few times that you should take extra care in what you use to generate those keys. So it's something to
maybe it's just something to do with the form size on the access points on the web page. You know, they have a limited form size. You can only fit maybe 20 or 30 characters there, and they think that you probably chop them off by accident when you're trying to get the results back or trying to put them back in or some such thing. But I, you know, if you're going to go that route, probably taking extra care would be a good idea.
Yeah, I guess you got to consider, after doing a lot of ward driving around the area, there are just tons of, open connections anyhow. So you got to say, what are you going to do? At least if you start getting the basics down, and then you can go from there. And I think that's what's really important. Unless, of course, it's your place of business, and then you should probably hire somebody who knows what they're doing to get security for you. Not like Link's place of business.
Shut up. No. No, I do this. I do the same thing at work that I do at home, and that's set it up so that it's filtered by MAC address. And in all fairness, I really have no clue whatsoever if the damn thing actually works that way, because the only person that ever walks around there with a wireless card is me. So, you know, I don't know if someone else is actually, well, of course, if someone else is trying to crack my wireless network, they're not going to come in and tell me that it didn't work. They probably won't come and tell me that it did work either. But I don't know. What are you going to do?
At work, we pride ourselves on running wide open.
And this is, and where exactly is it that you work, Dan?
Southern Lehigh School District. Just drive up 309 North. Park yourself right by our administration building, and you could be surfing the web in no time.
Southern Lehigh School District. There you go, wireless accessors. If you want to test out that new wireless car, you know where to park your car in front of right now.
Another place to park your car right next to is DoubleClick on Route 191. They have a wide-open network over there.
Do they really? I'll have to hit that tomorrow. I work just about right next to there, so.
I would venture to guess that they do have some pretty good security in there. I think that open one is for customers that come in there and just general display type purposes, because they are an Apple dealership there and a reseller, so they're an Apple shop. And of course, we're going to show off the new Apple Airport Extreme technology, and what better way to do it than have a channel open for people to use.
That's really cool. So when I got it, when I get out of work, if I want to, you know, do some quick emailing, I can pull off there on 191 and just park in their parking lot for a few minutes and see what happens.
Yes, you could. And that's a beautiful thing, isn't it? That is a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Perhaps we should even broadcast our next show from there. If you're listening, DoubleClick, see you next Wednesday.
Was that the end of the show?
Is that? No.
Oh, I thought you were closing the show.
You didn't shut it off, did you?
No, I didn't shut it off.
We're having more technical difficulties here. Dan is trying to figure out when I'm going to stop talking so he can do his thing. I will stop talking in a minute. One of the, just a couple of quick things we agreed upon going over real quick is doing this implementation of Linux in the workplace. We wanted to follow that up, or follow up the wireless talk with that. And I can tell you that I myself work in a really big marketing company, and we do some telemarketing. No, we're not the bad kind of telemarketers, so don't, like, spam me with hate mail or something like that. I don't call you up at dinner time when you're trying to eat your roast beef. But my company does, of course, when you're doing any kind of marketing, you have these huge, huge databases. And one of the things that I have used at work to try and keep up with the database demands and the space requirements and things like that is to implement Linux at work. And I have, I think, 7 Linux servers set up right now. This is just the way to go, people. You cannot run big Microsoft servers and have them stay up and running. And like Dan said, he just replaced the Linux Link server over here, was running 241 days. on a what was a P200 or P233 or something like that?
No, it was just a Pentium 233, not a Pentium 233. A Pentium 233.
That's just, you know, astronomical. And you do generate some fair traffic here too, with a bunch of websites that you run and all of that happy business that goes on.
Yeah, it gets a moderate level of traffic, but you know, you got to figure prior to that 241 days. I mean, it was up and running, you know, another couple hundred, 100 to 200 days. And I think back then at 241 days, it was either a power failure in the house, which lasted longer than my UPS, or I believe I took it down to add some more memory or replace something. And prior to that, it was went down just to upgrade the operating system, the kernel on there. So, I mean, it's been running for huge clips at a time.
Yeah, that's definitely the way to go. And that's the way that, you know, I need to have things go at work where I'm at anyway, because I really can't afford to have, 100 or 200 people waiting around for something to do while I'm trying to reboot the server because it's running Windows, pick your version. And that's just no good. So basically what I did, I needed some really good file space. And I took Linux. In fact, I even think it's Slackware 9. So this is after Slackware 9 came out. I took Slackware 9, set it up on the PCs that I needed to have it set up on. And I just installed Samba. And Samba, for those of you who do not know, is a file sharing system that talks to it talks NetBIOS lingo between a Linux box and a Windows box. It makes the Windows box think that the file share is a Windows file share on the Linux box. It works incredibly well. Windows doesn't know any different. It runs way, way, way faster than any Windows file share you can do. Much more reliable. There's no doubt. You can't beat it. So if you're in a need for a public file share or something like that, that is the way to go. And we were going to talk about Dan's implementation in his workplace of Linux, but he kind of already covered that, didn't you?
I don't think I did. I
did. You, well, you talked about, well, you had WIFI coverage.
Yeah, but that's not
free WIFI coverage. Yeah, by the way,
that's not Linux in a workplace.
Well, it depends on what kind of router you're running, right? Linksys runs Linux.
Yeah, Linksys, but we're running Cisco stuff now. But, you know, actually, Linksys is actually owned and operated. It's a division of Cisco. Or at least that's what it says on their boxes. I do run a Linux workstation / server over there that has served my purposes for the past 3 years quite admirably. I'm running as a DNS server, as a web server, as an internal mail server, as a remote access server for me. I was the only person that had remote access into the district for the past 3 years. It runs really great. Now, we recently purchased a...
Those are some good digs, though. And how much did that whole setup cost you there, Dan?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nope, just took an old workstation that we had laying around and threw Slackware on it. Right now, actually, it's running SUSE because I wanted to try out the latest desktop version of SUSE.
You know,
which
folks,
is
that
nice.
Is definitely the power of open source right there.
Yes, it's nice. I've always kind of liked SUSE myself, but it's not as fast as Slackware. Not as fast. But anyway, we just got a new backup, single source backup device, which runs a version of Red Hat on it. Which was nice because I had to actually, when my boss messed it up, I had a SSH telnet into it and then SSH into it to reconfigure it so it would work. But that's sweet. One of the most important devices on our network in our entire infrastructure is running Linux. Novell, which we are predominantly a Novell shop, is porting supposedly all its services over to Linux. Starting now, they're in beta testing of it. Hopefully start releasing it at the beginning of 2004, or maybe into the second quarter of 2004, I think is what they're predicting now. That's going to be nice. I mean, they've really embraced a lot of open source technology.
So what do you suppose is actually the benefit of them doing that, though?
Benefit,
I mean,
to who?
Linux and a lot of the free Unixes already have such monstrous file sharing and file serving capabilities. What exactly is Novell getting out of Linux that they don't already, you know, what are they trying to get out of Linux that they don't have on their system? Or
I think one of the biggest benefits that Novell is getting, they're coming out from underneath DOS. They won't be shackled to DOS anymore. Plus, they're looking at extending their services beyond Windows operating system,
right,
to get out of the shackles of Microsoft, too.
Yeah, but in its most basic form, what's going to happen with this new Novell is they're going to use probably a Red Hat version of Linux. And once they do that, they're going to stick their probably some custom NFS mounts on there or something like that, or IPX, SPX protocols, customize them and make them run a little better on Linux, which is going to be better for Linux, plus their administration utilities.
You could tell Link's still back in the Novell 3.x.
I honestly still do run Novell
3.x. Actually, it's straight IP. They're completely open standards, open protocols, going with IP all the way. They've ported their E directory over, which is a nice little LDAP directory for managing users, services to users. They have an outstanding printing system. Novell calls iPrint. They have very good functionality with portal design and portal systems. They're enterprise technology and their iPortal has really, really great utility to use. And all this would be coming over. Plus, I think the biggest benefit, one of the biggest things which Linux is severely lacking right now, is a enterprise-level groupware system. Now, I know SUSE just released something, but Novell has their GroupWise, which is a pretty popular groupware-based system with email, calendaring, document management, and that's one of the areas that I think Linux will definitely benefit, is to have another option in the groupware department.
Right, but don't we have that kind of functionality now under web-based utilities and things like that, project management and all that?
Yeah, if you want to cobble together a bunch of different web-based utilities, yes, but when you take a look at what the businesses, a lot of businesses are using Outlook as their groupware capability, and then, you know, with Outlook you have the capability of remote access in addition to syncing with Palm Pilots and doing all sorts of other stuff. Thanks a lot, Alan. Take it easy. You don't have a lot of that integration in the Linux environment yet. Like SUSE has an enterprise level groupware system that is just breaking into the services that a lot of companies have come to rely on. GroupWise already has that in place.
This is the general like scheduling, calendaring stuff like they use what's the Windows package that does that there?
Outlook.
Their Outlook package does all of that garbage?
Yes, it does. The Outlook package does that. But the benefit of not using Outlook is you're not a recipient of all those email viruses.
Microsoft tax. Worms. That's the benefit of not using Windows. You don't have to pay the Microsoft tax.
The Microsoft tax plus running virus-free.
That's a definite plus. Which is another... Here's a quick shot for you. This new virus that's out right now that I'm getting hammered with, what is it called? It's swap or swarm or... It's a new name every week. And this particular swan, swan, whatever it is also it's a direct offshoot of another virus that was out just two weeks ago. You can find out some really good information about it from CERT, by the way. But... this new email, in the last 3 days, I have gotten on a Linux account. Thank God it's a Linux email account. I have gotten probably 400 emails with this stupid Windows worm in it. Now, I don't have to worry about it because basically I don't run Windows. I mean, I don't run Outlook, so I don't have to have that problem with infection spreading rampantly throughout my system or any of that baloney. Basically, I run a Pine email client, which is a text client, and I just delete the stuff. It really doesn't bother me, except for the fact that I actually do have to sit there and delete it over and over and over and over and over again. So, Microsoft, please, if you're listening, fix your software. Got to do something to make it a little easier on us people just trying to read our email and having to drive our way through all of this voluminous spam that's happening all the time.
Actually, Microsoft, you should be listening. You should be out fixing your software.
Right.
Not listening.
You think that's about it?
I guess that's going to be about
it. This is probably about the wrap for the first edition of the Linux Show. Obviously, the Linux Link Tech Show. Obviously, and hopefully, things are going to get a little better from here on in, and perhaps we'll have a little bit better format as we get a feel for things when they go along, and our content will improve with your participation. We sat here and looked on our IRC channel, and boy, there was nobody there. So I hope that the rest of you people are going to intend on getting this off the archive and listening to it sometime real soon. And in the interim, there's a couple of things that I wanted to leave you with. For more Linux information, if you're in the Allentown, Bethlehem, Easton area, anywhere around the Lehigh Valley area of Pennsylvania, please contact the Lehigh Valley Linux Users Group. And you can find them, again, at this website. It's thelinuxlink.net/LVLUG. And you can get information.
No, it's
there.
The Linux Link.
Linux. That's what
net.
It is. The LinuxLink.net.
LinuxLink.net/LVLinux.
You can grab all of our information on there. By the way, Dan and I happen to be the co-founders of the group, so we're just going to put our nice little plug way at the end so you don't think we're trying to pull something over on you. This is a free group. We love to see new people. We love to teach people about open source and Linux and Unix, and we always have a really good time. So by all means, check us out and come to one of our meetings if you can, and say hi. The other thing I wanted to mention was there's another group out in the Lehigh Valley area called the Lehigh Valley Computer Group. And that's, you can find information from them at lvcg.org. And the reason that I really wanted to mention them, other than the fact that maybe some of them will be listening tonight, is they have an outstanding Linux group for new people, for newbies over there. And simply hit their website, again, at lvcg.org, and click on that Linux SIG link. The SIG is for Special Interest Group. And check them out if you really need... If you really need some expert tutelage and you're not in the know yet. And until next time...
There's another group out there, but I don't think we'll mention them this week.
Yeah. Until next time, I'm Link.
I'm Dan.
And this is The Tech Show.
And we're going to leave you with the theme song, Ruined by Me, of course, because I really like that one.
Because you ruined it.
Yeah, because I ruined it. So long.
Linux Link Tech Show. Linux Link Tech Show.